Hello and welcome to Empowerment. Sorry for the squeaky voice. that was funny. sorry, it will clear out. It usually does. Welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. As always, I'm very happy to be with you today, and just saying that date kind of made me smile because, you know, aside from today having a cool date, 2/25/25, today is my granddaughter Quinn's 8th birthday. I can't believe she's 8 years old, and she's just a beautiful girl. And so I just want to wish Quinn a happy birthday today. Not that she'll ever hear this, but it makes me feel good to do it. So she's having a day. She's having a day. I was texting with her mom last Friday, and I hadn't asked. You know, usually they do these extravaganza birthdays where they go to places where they have, you know, activities and stuff, kids' places. And I said, so is Quinn's birthday party this weekend? And she goes, well, not a party, but I'm taking her and three of her friends to lunch and to a movie. And she goes, much better than a party, LOL, you know, which, I mean, those things are, and she said, much less expensive. And I said, I'm sure it is. But it also was more grown up. You know, I think just to have three girlfriends, go to lunch with your mom and your girlfriends and go to a movie, I think that's pretty cool. That felt really good. So I'm sure Quinn had a lovely time. And again, it's just hard to believe that she's 8 years old and she's, you know, more than half as tall as me, which is no big feat. But she's a really tall, lovely girl who is great at sports. She plays volleyball, basketball. Every sport they can put her in, she does, and she does well, soccer, but especially basketball. She's really good at basketball, but she is really tall and comes from a very athletic mom who actually played professional soccer and actually went to China and played soccer, Kristen, my daughter-in-law. So she's just really, she's a great influence with Quinn, or on Quinn, I should say, in her sports. But anyway, enough about my beautiful granddaughter. And I've got a picture from Valentine's Day that I'll put in the chat room on the break for all three kids. I haven't posted a picture of them in a really long time, and I thought about that. And they're just growing up and just really being their own people, which is really cool to see and see how different they are. But anyway, enough of that. We've had the craziest weather here. You know, spring is definitely making itself known already. I mean, definitely. It's like a switch got flipped last week. Last Tuesday, it was 17 degrees, something like 17 degrees. And snowing a weird kind of dry snow that actually it snowed all day long. And you could still see the pavement through the snow. So it was just bizarre, but really cold. I mean, it was below zero a couple mornings last week, and in the teens and in the single digits early in the morning. And then Thursday night, it started to snow. And there was a storm warning because it started, of course, like around 4 or 5 o'clock. So the storm warning for, you know, be careful driving home on Thursday night and to work on Friday morning. And it was incredible how fast it collected. It was this dense, heavy, wet snow, which is typical spring snow. It looked like, by Friday morning, it looked like about 6 inches that we got here, that I got here, that I could measure in my, on a table in my yard. But it had also, it had drifted because it's been windy too. That's spring around here. So it had drifted and it was absolutely beautiful because Friday morning, the sky was blue, the sun was out, and it was gorgeous. But it was amazing how much snow I mean, it looked like, I think officially 6 inches, but because it had drifted through the yard, it just looked massive. I mean, Grace couldn't go out in there. And like I said, it was really heavy and water laden. So it was really difficult to shovel. And all I did was cleared off the back patio a little bit and cleared a little space in the grass so that Grace could go out. And that was really about all I could do, because Scott was coming over later. He always does snow shoveling for me, and he was coming over to do that later on in the day. But the thing that was interesting is, here's all this snow, but later that day the temperature was in the mid 40s, and then Saturday I think it got into the 50s, and then Sunday and yesterday and I think today too, it's in the 60s. So all of that snow is gone, and it was gone like by yesterday morning. So spring, here we go. This is spring. You know, the snow melted, and that was a ton of water, you know, for the lawn and the trees and the flower beds. So it was just brilliant. It was just brilliant. And, you know, spring snow is wonderful because it just does so much good. It kind of like, you know, it's, even though it's still cool out, even though, I mean, winter is still happening. We get snowstorms. We got a snowstorm a few years ago on, I think it was the last week of May. And it was heavy and broke down branches and just, you know, out of the blue, a spring snow. But, and they do that. I mean, they can be destructive. There's just nothing really, the leaves are not out, so no damage done this time. But, you know, we've got a couple more months. March and April are typically, March especially, like one of our snowiest months, and into April. So there's more coming, but boy, I mean, that was such a dramatic difference from earlier in the week. It was incredible. I think it really did make a shift. So that was fun to see and experience. And then yesterday I noticed, as we walked back in from our walk, little baby irises are sprouting in my flower beds. So that's really cool to see too. You know, I love spring because it's like it's a front row seat to witness the tenaciousness of life. I mean, that's what it is. And I will add to that, get as much joy out of it as we possibly can, because it is a joyful time of year. So I just want to say thank you again for listening today. If you can, please join us in the chat room. Just go to 12radio.com and click chat. Feel free to comment or ask questions about the teaching segment, and I will answer them after the show in the chat room. If you would like a reading from me, you can find me every day on 12listen.com. I'm available usually mid to later morning Pacific, into the evening. And if you stop by and you don't see me, or if I'm busy, just put in a callback request or schedule a call. I'm notified immediately, and I will always do my best to meet your schedule. I will get back to you as quickly as I possibly can. We will be celebrating the new moon in Pisces this Thursday with reduced rates on calls and chats. And that reminds me, the new moon in Pisces, Quinn was born the night before the new moon. And her chart, and I'm not an astrologer, but her chart is all Pisces and Aries. All. With the exception of her rising sign, which is Virgo. Her moon, I think, is... No. Her moon is Pisces. I'm not an astrologer. Disclaimer. Her rising sign is Virgo. But that was a crazy chart to see. It's like, wow, it's all the same. So you got water and fire. Water and fire. That's Quinn. That is Quinn. And I just wanted to mention that I have a welcome spring 15-minute time-based session available now. And spring, more on spring. Spring just symbolizes new beginnings. You know, it's everything coming back to life. And we can use this session in any way you want to, but this is a great time to use that momentum, because it is a fiery momentum in spring. It is cardinal. It is moving, growing, doing, being. And it's just this is a way to clear things out of the way so that you can really make use of that. You know, the more we flow with the season that we're in, the more we get out of it, and the better we feel, because we're not pushing against the tide, right? We're not. And so that always helps, but it's a good time to release limitation in order to be available for new opportunities and just what this gorgeous season has to offer. And also, just a reminder, the You Empowered Intuitive Feng Shui classes are on 1-2 Academy. A series of 4 classes begins on Thursday, March 20th, the first day of spring, at 5 p.m. Pacific. And I invite you to join me for this. I'm really, really excited about it. You know, feng shui is a very powerful, very positive practice. Your home is a metaphor for your life, and qi, light, is life energy. And the simple object of the practice of feng shui is to have qi flow unimpeded through your home, energizing the various aspects of your life. And my purpose, my main objective in teaching these classes is to take the mystery out of it and look at the basics from a Western metaphysical point of view. And that's why it's called intuitive feng shui. I learned it that way and I love to teach it that way. The practice of intuitive feng shui is simple, very common sense, very intuitive, and a lot of fun. And it's just another example of you are master and commander, period. You know, you are the center of your universe, and everything in your universe responds to you. So any way that we can use to feel empowered, to move things, to do things, to move energy, and feel a difference, and feel supported and empowered in doing it, why not? Why not? It's just another way. It's another thing that proves to you that you really are the boss. You really are the boss of you. And you can change anything in your life. Anything. And feng shui to me is, it's a reminder of that. But it's when you move something and you know the purpose of moving it, then every time you see it, it reminds you of that purpose. And it's kind of like, they're kind of like, you might think of them as physical affirmations. So you see that, you know, you see the crystal spinning in your career space and you remember what you put it there for. And it's just, it's cool. You know, it's support. It's support. And I believe our homes should be our sanctuary. They should support us. Everything in them should support us. Because when we are supported by our environment, we take that with us out into the world as a powerful, peaceful, and graceful presence. So anyway, the class, there's 4 classes. The first one is the basics, which covers colors, elements, shapes of the Bagua has 9 life areas. It will go over the Bagua, show you where they're located, and the colors, elements, shapes associated with them, and the creative and destructive cycles, cures and enhancements. So we'll go into detail on that, and that's really fun. The second class is covering and going into depth on the prosperity areas of the Bagua. Class 3 is relationship areas of the Bagua, because we can use our home to support us in prosperity, to support us in our relationships. And the class 4 will be about health, and also a little more time on the fame and reputation area, and also to answer specific concerns and answer questions that the students might have. There is no prerequisite for these classes. They will be standalones. I encourage you to take all of them because, again, they're fun and we get on a roll, but you can pick and choose. You can pick and choose. They will be listed up on 1-2 Academy until they're all completed. They will all be recorded. So if the time doesn't work for you to attend live, register anyway. Everyone who registers gets a recording to the class. So join me. We'll have a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And I also As always, I want to remind you of the gratitude board. Post what you're grateful for, whether it's in your experience or not. The advisors of One to Listen will add our intention to yours. You can post anonymously, so there's no reason not to. Take advantage. It's support. It's support from our side. And I just want to say thanks again for listening. However, whenever you do, there is programming 24/7 on One Two Radio, and there are archives of all of the shows from all of the hosts in the on-demand section at onetworadio.com. You can download them anytime you want. And One Two Radio is a great source of inspiration, information, and support. So again, take advantage. Take advantage. just want to say thank you to Serena for producing my show and taking care of us on One Two Radio. And let's move into the teaching segment by listening to a song called Fairy Night Songs by Gary Stadler and Stephanie from the Celtic Lounge 3 CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it. I'll be back right after, and hopefully I can drink enough honey water to get my voice clear. I'll be right back. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm glad you're here. That music. I thought it was really lovely. I am into Celtic Lounge 1, 2, and 3, because to me it really feels like it feels like spring to me. And so I'm going to be playing it for a while. I've missed that music. I lost those when my computer crashed about a year ago and lost a lot of my music. And the Celtic Lounge CDs were ones that I haven't seen in a little over a year, so there's just some beautiful stuff on all of them, so I'll be sharing that on the show. And of course, that's from Sequoia Records. And anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. So last week, I ended the show with a quote from Alan Watts. And this is a quote from the audiobook called Out of Your Mind. You can get it on Audible, probably other places too. And it contains 12 of Alan Watts' pinnacle teachings. And this, and what I'm going to talk about today, the portion from Alan Watts, is from Session 5 called The Inevitable Ecstasy. And the quote is, "You will struggle and struggle as long as you think you're missing something." And that, I think, that is the perfect setup for what I want to talk about today, which is the self, capital S-E-L-F. So I want to start with Joel Goldsmith. And this is from his book called The Heart of Mysticism. And it's from a chapter called Father Consciousness. And he wrote, "All the inharmony of human existence arises because of a lack of understanding of our true identity. This has brought about a sense of separation between us and God, which in turn has separated us from our good. Such is the story of the prodigal son. The son had everything, a rich father, a good home, and a well-established position in life. Then came the desire to be something of himself, to achieve something of and on his own. Very quickly, he used up his substance. The supply that had been stored up for him was depleted because it was not being renewed. The son no longer had contact with his source, his father's house. At the end of the road, he came to the realization that even his father's servants were far more fortunate than was he. And slowly he began the return to the father's house. But while he was yet a long way off, his father came out to greet him, to reestablish him in his home, in his sonship, in his heirhood, and all was well again. Such is the story of all human beings. We are all prodigals. What is the fall of man but a sense of separation from God? It is the descent from divine consciousness to the belief and acceptance of a selfhood apart from God, whereas the return to the Father's house is the remembrance of your selfhood as God's own self. There is only one self, and that self is God, regardless of what you or anyone else may think about it or how it may be misinterpreted. God is the only self. When you correctly understand the inner significance of the story of the prodigal son, you will have the secret of life. In the beginning, you are the father consciousness. You are not just a favored son in the beginning. You are one with the father consciousness. But you've cut yourself off to make of yourself a son separate and apart from the father. Not a son in the spiritual sense of sonship, which is that of an emanation or offspring of God consciousness, an individualization of God consciousness, but the kind of a son who is a separate entity, who has forgotten that God is not only the Father, but God is also the Son. The Son in his oneness with the Father is the Father consciousness, the all-embracing, all-embodying, one infinite consciousness. consciousness. And so the main contributors to that sense of a selfhood apart from God is ego, number one. Well, no, they're equal. They're equal. They're not one and two. They're equal. Ego, and of course, our human influences. You know, our belief in the power of good and evil, good and bad, right and wrong, and our judgments, how we the filters that every single thing that comes into our experience, to include our thoughts, and our judgments of ourselves, are our human influences. They are not true. They're not true. But again, ego is the belief in a selfhood apart from God. That's what ego is. Ego wants to keep us safe and separate, wants to define us as individuals and compare us to everyone else, and also make enemies of everything outside of us. You know, keep us safe and separate. So, of course, everything outside of us is a threat. It's an interesting thing. And Alan Watts talks about ego, and I just love what he has to say. But this is from The Inevitable Ecstasy, Alan Watts. And this was a recording. This is not verbatim. But he says, in talking about, you know, just consciousness and ego and following what I just read from Joel, you know you're alive. You are consciousness. But consciousness is everywhere. It is the background from which things are differentiated. But we don't notice it. We notice the things that come out of it. We think space is nothing. But space is the relationship between forms. If there were not space behind something, we couldn't see the thing. When we get quiet and just listen, we hear sounds. But where do the sounds come from? They come out of silence, or nothing, or space. Without the background or space, we could not see form. Everything would just blend together. So space and form are equal. So consciousness or background is ever present, but goes unnoticed because it is ever present. It is the divine ground. And it is also, another word, the Tao. You know, the Tao is. It just is. It's life. It's reality. It's consciousness. It's the background. It's ever present. It's that which is seeing through our eyes. As a baby, back to Alan, as a baby, you were told things by adults. And the main thing they told you was the difference between yourself and everyone else. A child is told who they are and what they are and what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to be. This is the beginning of the ego, which is not a living organism. It is an abstract social convention, but we treat it as real. It is our image of ourself, but it is not ourself. It is inaccurate and incomplete. It is a caricature. It's not only our self-image, but it's also feedback from other people telling us who we are. We are told we must have a consistent image. You know, what role do I play? What do I do? And I would add to that, how do I appear to others? And do they approve? You know, that's all ego. That's all ego. But, Alan says, you say, I don't feel that I'm only an image. I feel there's more to me. And that corresponds to the word I. We see through our eyes, but who is seeing? What are we feeling? We know there is something more there, but what we feel is a chronic, habitual sense of muscular strain because of trying to be what we are supposed to be, what we've been told we're supposed to do. Chronic tension is the root of the feeling of the ego, feeling that we are separate from self and that we must control the personal self. Think about that. Think about when you go someplace. You know, you're going to visit maybe family, or you're going out for dinner, or you know, whatever it is. Just think about, I'm throwing this out, and I'm throwing it out from myself, you know, myself, my truth. When you go to visit someone that you love, you're, you know, like maybe your best friend or a family member, and you can just totally be yourself. Think about that. You're just yourself. You know, warts and all. You go, you sit down, you're comfortable, you can breathe, you can have a great conversation, and you just know it's safe. You know, in those situations, you have permission to be yourself without judgment on either side, because you can just appreciate each other. And you can also be totally honest with each other and vulnerable, because that's just the kind of loving relationship that you have with this person. And usually, I'm just going to say this, this is a really broad statement, but usually my experience and my feeling is in life, those are few and far between. I mean, they really are. They really are. But I think the more we get past get more real with ourselves, maybe it comes with, you know, getting older, you know, having experiences, more and more experiences, because all those experiences are part of our influences and our filters. But, you know, when we get more comfortable with who we are, really who we are, and how we are, then I think we have an easier time being that with other people, not just people that we know we're safe being that with, such as family or good friends or whatever. But then think about, okay, that's one side of the coin. I'm with someone that I love. I can be myself. We have a great time. And the other side of the coin is, say you're going to a party or a business event or someplace where you don't know everybody there. Think about the feeling. I'm talking about that, and I can actually feel my back get a little tense. You know, what am I going to wear? What do I think other people are going to wear? What, you know, how's this going to be? What, you know, we go through all that stuff. That's ego. That's ego. How do I handle myself? How do I present myself? And I'm thinking of times myself, events that I've gone to where I felt like I was in this thing that I feel in my back right now, just that tension, and that like a corset, wearing a corset, you know, and went that way through a whole night, you know, being what I was supposed to be, making up, you know, the appearances, you know, keeping up with appearances, being what I was supposed to be. And it's just the most amazing thing. It's the most amazing thing. And I used to do that also with my family when years ago, when we'd come back, when Shannon and I would come back for Christmas from Las Vegas, or when we lived in Arizona. And it was just the most interesting thing, because I've always felt like, you know, I've just always been a fringe dweller, you know, the square peg. And so, you know, back then, my feeling of being a square peg was, I don't fit and I'm uncomfortable and I don't know what to do. And so, you know, I'm just going to bide my time through this. And now it's like, I celebrate that. I just absolutely celebrate that because it's who I am. It's what I am. Yeah, it's based on, you know, my whole lifetime of just being different. But it's not something, you know, at that point, I viewed it as being negative. It's not negative. It's just me, you know, it's me. And now when I'm with my family, it's like, look, if you can't handle it, I'm sorry. I'm just going to be me. And not that I'm crazy or wild or anything. I think that's pretty obvious, but we see things differently. You know, we are at different vibrations, and that's perfectly fine. Everybody's in their own evolution, everybody. And that's perfectly fine. But now it's like, I can celebrate it and I can be comfortable and I can be a grounded, graceful person, you know, walking in and just, you know, back to what do I have to offer? Taking responsibility for being something, offering something productive and loving. When I walk into their house, I mean, though I have felt that way, you know, in a really long time with my family, but, you know, adopting that going into any situation, a business gathering, a party, whatever it is, just being that, because that's that, in my opinion, that's me being myself and more true to myself. And it just, it feels good. It feels really good. I talked about it last week when I talked about jury duty. But it feels really good and I like it. And I'm adopting it as my method of operation. So, you know, what you vibrate at, you attract. So do your best to vibrate at something good. But anyway, back to, you know, just talking about that chronic tension that is the root of the feeling of the ego. And boy, it just made so much sense. And I just had to talk more about that because it did make sense and kind of wanted to expand on that. But back to that last line where Watt said, you know, the feeling of the ego is feeling that we are separate from self and that we must control the personal self. But at the same time, life is happening. It is all that is. It's that consciousness, that background. And we are a part of it, all of it. There is a process going on called life, and it is controlling itself through you. You are an aperture through which the universe looks at itself. As the universe is looking at itself through you, there's a part of it that it cannot see. And that's the part of us that we know there's something more to us. That's it. That's it. That's what he was talking about before. He goes on to say, it's a game of hide and seek. Energy, matter, being, the Tao, we know they exist, but we can never find them. And we can't do anything about that. We can't. We think we're missing something, and we will struggle and struggle as long as we think we're missing something. But we're not missing anything. We know there is more to us, but we can't see what looks through our eyes, so we think we lost it. He said what we're in search of is the self, the infinite self, capital S. We can't do anything to find God, life, etc., because we are it. We are it. I love that. It goes on, it goes on no matter what. And that's the whole point. So now, back to Joel. And this is from Joel's recording called The Self, and you can find that on YouTube. Joel said, as long as we struggle and strive, we are in mortality. But when we give up, surrender, detach, we create a vacuum into which God comes. The egotistical part of us drops away, and we experience God. We experience the presence. God must be permitted to reveal itself within you. When we deny personal selfhood, as Jesus did when he said, I of my own self can do nothing. The Father within me does the works. We become, when we deny personal selfhood, we become the instrument for divinity to become evident on earth. In the presence of God is fulfillment. Knowing God aright is the goal. Love is not something we express, but that only God expresses through us. When we face life without judgment, and again, he's talking about our influences, judging everything as right, wrong, good, bad, whatever, that takes us completely off track. But he says, when we face life without judgment, then we begin to be an instrument for love. There is nothing in life to get. The secret to harmonious living is knowing God as Father, having a relationship with the infinite. I have to go back to the thing back to, again, we are master and commander, supreme in our own orbit. God must be permitted to reveal itself within you. That takes consciousness on our part. That is, you know, it's not just out of the, you know, praying, you know, Joel says that prayer is not us talking to God, but God talking to us. And in order to hear God talking to us, we have to be quiet. We have to be in that place. We have to be available to the still small voice, to the presence of God that moves, to the peace that passes understanding. But that's how we, you know, we permit it by sitting down and listening. Listening. That is a powerful statement. God must be permitted to reveal itself within you. But it is that, not just affirmations, not just statements, making statements of truth or affirmations, but it really is having that relationship with the infinite, knowing, feeling that peace that passes understanding. When you sit in quiet, when you just let things go, when you let everything go, you know, we let go of that, we let go of just everything, the moment. It's kind of like stepping out of hard physicality into just this lovely, soft place to land, getting quiet, just being there. You know, it's like, I know there's something more to me than my image. I know there's something more to me. I know that there's something that's seeing through my eyes. It's hearing through my ears. What is it? Well, that's how we experience it. And as Neville said, God is known by experience or not at all. As I shared last week, Michael Tamura wrote, love provides all the opportunities of life, and love shows us how to make use of them as well. But love also always honors free will. So, unless you invite her in with welcoming questions, she remains silent and ever faithfully yours in the wings. It's the same concept. You know, he was talking about questions, productive questions. How can I help? How can I see this differently? How can this situation How can this be a benefit to all concerned? That's what he was talking about, welcoming questions. Well, sitting down, being quiet, and, you know, listening for the still small voice. You know, I hear, I'm listening. Speak, Lord. That, too, is the same as the welcoming questions. It's all the same truth. All the same truth said in beautiful, thought-provoking ways by wonderful teachers. But it's still totally and completely up to us. We have to invite love in. We have to permit God to reveal itself to us. Each of us is an aperture through which the universe looks at itself. So of course we can't find it by looking for it. We can't find it. It's not outside of us. It is us. By looking for it, we can only find it by being it. By being it. And that comes through surrender. That comes through surrender. And Ram Dass, I hear Ram Dass in my ear, and I know I can't get this quote perfectly, but he talks about, you know, that consciousness, that father consciousness. He talks about the father consciousness, and that is the subjective. The subjective is what is seeing through our eyes, experiencing itself through us, through our senses, through our activities. And talents and abilities and accomplishments and all of that. It's just experiencing itself through us. But what it's experiencing is the objects, right? It's experiencing what is outside of us. But it is the witness, the subject. And I think Ram Dass said the way he, the last line of that was, we can never know the Father. We can only be it. I love that. So in talking about the self, I had to go back to the Upanishads because that's kind of ground zero, you know, with the consciousness of self and being one self, and all of us are that one self. Ignat Ishwaran wrote, he wrote the introduction to and translated the Upanishads, the Dhammapada, and the Bhagavad Gita. And they are called the classics of Indian literature. And they are beautiful. The way he writes is like a warm blanket. I love the way he writes. So in the introduction to the Upanishads, he wrote, what remains when every trace of individuality is removed? We can call it pure being, for it is in differentiating this unity that created things, that the created things acquire their name and form. So pure being, differentiating itself, becomes created things. The sages called it Brahman, from the root Bri, which means to expand. Brahman is the irreducible ground of existence, the essence of everything, of the earth and sun and all the creatures, of gods, little g, and human beings, and every power of life. Simultaneously with this discovery comes another. This unitary awareness is also the ground of one's own being, the core of personality. This divine ground, the Upanishads call simply Atman, the self, spelled with a capital to distinguish it from the individual personality. In the unitive state, the self is seen to be one, the same in everyone. This is not a reasoned conclusion. It is something experienced at the very center of one's being, an inalienable fact. In all persons, all creatures, the self is the innermost essence, and it is identical with Brahman. Our real self is not different from the ultimate reality called God. This tremendous equation, the self is Brahman, quote unquote, is the central discovery of the Upanishads. Its most famous formulation is Tat Tvam Asi. You are that. Quote unquote, that is the characteristic way the Upanishads point to a reality that cannot be described. And quote unquote, you, of course, is not the petty, finite personality, but that pure consciousness which makes the eye see and the mind think. The self. So, on that note, I just want to end by saying there is nothing missing. Nothing missing. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you found that valuable or at least interesting. You've been listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world. Please stay tuned for Katie Weaver, followed by Christina LaFrance, and have a very blessed week, everyone. Bye-bye.